The Big News Coming Soon podcast is proudly sponsored by BRB Homes. BRB Homes is Ireland's number one award-winning manufacturer of factory-built homes. We take your home from start to finish. Our homes are A-rated and meet planning regulations. We build to your requirements and your budget. The cost includes your home being turnkey and our chartered engineer's fees. Please get in touch for a viewing of our show homes, a brochure, or for more information. Let BRB Homes take the stress out of your build. Check out brbhomes.ie.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hello and welcome to the Big News Coming Soon podcast. And this week I am back again in County Donegal. And I didn't mean to have two Donegal podcasts back to back, but that's just the way it worked out. I'd hoped to get a female in between and some gender balance and some county balance, but unfortunately that didn't go to plan. But anyway, we're back in Donegal. Delighted to be here. And we're here with the man of the moment, Mr. Eric Roberts.
Ladies and gentlemen, first of all, sorry to disappoint you all and that I'm not a woman. But
can you, for the purpose of this podcast, can you identify as a woman?
Absolutely. My name is Erica Roberts and I'm delighted to be here.
And can you be from down the country somewhere?
No problem at all, boy. I don't even know where that accent was. Okay.
That was kind of Mayo, I'd say, was it? Eric, it's fair to say you are the man of the moment. You're absolutely stuck in everything right now.
It's been a mental, I suppose, month or so, and it's been difficult to process everything that's been happening, but I'm really enjoying it all. I'm enjoying being as busy as I am. Sure, who knows how long it's going to last.
For the one or two people that haven't heard of you, you're the man of the moment at the minute because you were on a show on Netflix that we'll get to very soon. But let's come right back to the start and let's talk about Eric Roberts. And even let's just go back into growing up. I'd say you were in the cool gang in school, were you?
I don't know if other people would say that. I definitely thought so. We loved our football, and I was very, very much involved in athletics and sports and soccer and Gaelic and stuff growing up. And it was just, it's all I thought about. My dad absolutely threw us into everything that was happening. If there was a rowing team, we would have been on it. But I loved it. I loved being active, and I loved having a different thing to do every day, and that went on until I discovered alcohol then and slowly deteriorated and didn't live up to the athlete I could have been.
What age did you discover alcohol?
I think I was 13 or 14. No, it was like everyone in the country. I was doing my junior shirt and said, geez, that's, yeah, isn't that nice? That tastes nice. No, but I wouldn't say I had too much of a love for it, but I could have been county. Do you know what I mean?
Caught up in the hype, don't you? And the kind of, we had, it was a lake in Castlebar. We used to go to the lake at the weekends. and you'd go down by the lake, and that the guards wouldn't come down there. There was no real path. Do you know what I mean? Did you have a place like
a
that?
Safe space. All there was deaf.
We used to call it bushing.
Yeah. We didn't call it that, but yeah, you'd be off in some corner or crevice somewhere in Donegal drinking behind a bush or something.
You didn't have
yeah.
a specific place.
We didn't have a specific place, no. And I don't see too much of it happening anymore, which is amazing. Kids are too much on their devices now to be drinking in the field, which is great.
Yeah, well, that is great. And then, so when you were in school then, did you enjoy school?
I did. I did and I didn't. I wasn't extremely academic, but I also wasn't not. I was just very lazy. It wasn't that I wasn't intelligent enough to do the exams. I was just extremely lazy, and I always did the bare minimum to just get by.
Were you polite?
I just passed the Leaving Cert, but I passed everything, so that was a win.
Okay.
And but I was never going to be a doctor.
Did the teachers like you?
I was one of those ones they loved to hate. As in, I wasn't like the most devious person in school. I had a bit of crack with them, and they could have a laugh with me and stuff like that there. But also, I got a note home in my diary every single day. So it was one of those.
Right. Where are you from originally?
So I grew up in Dublin, and I lived in Dublin for 7 years. And then Dad moved us all up here. Then he got a new job. Mum's obviously from here originally. And we've lived up here then since I was 7 years of age. And I'm delighted that we have, because it was an amazing place to grow up. I love growing up in the country and all the friends I made and having such open spaces and so close to the beach and stuff. So I'm a huge advocate, obviously, for Donegal. More recently this year, I've been doing a lot of promoting for it, but it is very close to my heart, and I do absolutely love living here.
What part of Donegal are you from?
So I grew up in a place called Glen, and it's got one of the most famous pubs in the country, the Glen Bar. It's about 5 minutes from Downing's Beach and 2 minutes from Kerrygarten. It's a lovely, lovely wholesome area.
And your dad has somewhat become a bit of an influencer with his daily dips. And I just love following him. Like, he's a breath of fresh air. And he goes for a dip in Downing's every day, is it?
He does. So they started out, I think it was soon after lockdown, and I was actually there on the first dip, and there's a video up on YouTube of it. We went down, it says, we'll get in for a quick dip. And Frank, who has gone for a swim every single day for the past, I don't know how many years, but it's something crazy, but he's gone in for a swim every single day, and we says, we'll join him. And I went down the first day, freezing cold, and Dad went semi-consistently then for a long time, and Paddy, my brother-in-law, went in every single day, 365 days. He set himself a challenge every day. And now Frank and my dad continue to do it. They're both retired. They start off their day going for a swim first thing in the morning, rain, hail, sleet or shine, and they get in, and it is very refreshing. Like, I try and go down as much as I can every fortnight or maybe once a month, depending on how busy I am, and you just feel fantastic after it. And you can tell how much happier he is. He'd be known as a bit of a thick hoor, like, do you know what I mean? He was always involved in the football, and geez, he's thick. But he's a new aura about him now, and I think that's a lot to do with that.
How far is the water from your home house?
5 minutes drive. Yeah, okay. So it's lovely.
Handy.
Yeah, very, very handy.
And Frank then, his wingman, is he another dub?
He's another dub as well. Frank is 70 years of age.
And you is it just a coincidence that they met?
So they were friends for as long as I can remember. And Frank's wife and my mother are very, very close as well. Okay. So they've been family friends for as far back as I can remember. And Frank was always going for swims, but it would have been a thing we would have, like, oh, Jesus, mentally he's off his head. But
yeah,
Dad's just joined him now since, and they're building their own little influencer profiles.
Yeah, if you follow Eric, you'll have come across them at some stage. But they are a breath of fresh air, the two boys, and they're very youthful. The way they go on their page, they're just after coming out of the water, they're talking about whatever happened at the weekend, and they're giving everyone a shout out, and it's just great. They would do your heart good. So when you left school, then you're still into football. Like, you kind of play down the sport thing, but every time you go and play a sport, you seem to be winning.
Yeah, well, I love sports. Unfortunately, this year, I suppose it's good and bad. I was so busy that I missed out the majority of the season, but this is probably one of our most successful seasons for the club. We won the intermediate, and we stayed up in Division 1. We were in Division 4 not so many years ago, and we've gone 4-3-2-1. So it's been a really successful spell for the team, but I'm just deteriorating in my body.
What club is that?
That's Downing's.
Downing's.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're playing seniors this year, and it's an incredibly talented team. But I've all my life I've played for them. But I was always the one that was heading off to Ibiza for the summer or heading to Ayanapa and stuff. And definitely missed out, I'd say, on my prime years. But it's always been in me. I love trying to stay fit. I'm training now for a half marathon, and pre-season will be coming back, and I'll try and get down as much as I can next year as well. But as I say, there's extremely talented young fellas down there, and I can't keep up with them anymore.
Yeah, what age are you now?
33 now. You're pushing on.
You're flying it. But you played this charity celebrity football match last year, and then you scored this absolute screamer of a goal.
I did. It's funny. I think I played three Instagram matches last year, and all three games I scored the greatest goals I've ever scored in my life. And it just looked like I did it all the time, but I had never scored such goals.
Because I'm watching it thinking, God almighty, he's just unbelievable.
Yeah, I gave off that facade, but whatever happened at those games, like I would come off and like, did you see what I did there? but on the time I was like, yeah, that's what I do. I played a match over in Stamford Bridge and I scored a goal from beyond the halfway line and I came off. But it wasn't just that I kicked it and hoped it went in. I took a really good touch and controlled it and I shot and knew the keeper was offline. I came off and the caretaker went, oh, I've worked here for 30 years, mate. That's the best goal I've ever seen scoring at this pitch.
But you just spurted that out there like, I played a game at Stamford Bridge.
As if it's the norm.
As if it's just across the road there, someplace you hire out for an hour.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
So I was invited over with the brand, Cadbury's. I was the only person they brought over, and I think they had actually seen one of the goals I had scored earlier in the year, one of the other charity games, and I was lucky enough to be invited over. But that's just one of 15 things that shouldn't have happened this year. Like this year has just been packed tight with ridiculous things.
Everything that happened should have happened, and I'm not mad into the whole manifesting, but I definitely believe in if you work hard, it'll come. You said Cadbury's there a second ago, and it piqued my interest because I've done a bit of work with them before as well, and it's so hard to say Cadbury.
I just say,
and they're very particular about it.
Cadbury's.
You're not allowed to say Cadbury's.
I worked with Anne Post recently.
Oh yeah, I saw the comments.
I had to refill him that.
Anne Post.
I had to refill him that voiceover about six times because I'm working with Anne Post today, and it was pust, pust.
Yeah, no, I was just I did a video for Cadbury last Christmas. It was this Secret Santa thing, and I couldn't for the life of me say Cadbury.
Yeah, it sounds very posh, doesn't it?
Cadbury's. Yeah, it's Cadbury's.
Would you like some Cadbury's?
Yeah. So all the things that have happened this year, it's just incredible, and I love following your journey from the beginning. You started out. What was your first TikToker? Do you remember?
It was something ridiculous, as in. There was a trend going around at the time. I don't know if it was very early on TikTok where you would use different emojis and you would try and act them out as the emojis were coming. And yeah. It was just the most, I think you got 3 likes and 16 views. And I think I might have deleted it the day after. And then I tried again the next day. But it was like this horrible anxiety early on posting TikToks because no one posted content online from Donegal. It wasn't a thing. And I was terrified someone might see it. And then I used to do a bit of dancing. I was in a group called Static Movement, me and my friend Vinny. And we went on a show on Sky One called Got to Dance. And we did very, very well off the back of it. I think we were the most viewed clip of the series, even though we didn't do that well on the show.
Okay.
But it was really...
Did you keep your clothes on?
We did. We kept the majority of our clothes on. We were in tights. We wore tight for whatever reason. We thought tights would look good,
right?
So we wore tights then. And off the back of that, we used to get booked up and down the country doing weddings and nightclubs and different bits and bobs. And we did that for about 6 or 7 years. So I posted one of my first TikToks was a dance. I posted a dance, and it went very, very viral. And I think it was 600,000 views, and I was hooked. It had me. Once you get that first viral video, the claws are in you.
And is this during lockdown or before that?
This was peak lockdown.
Isn't it amazing the amount of people that have been made from COVID? Like, you know, there's all the negatives that happened, but all the positives are that it did create a lot of jobs. You know, it has turned out to be a job.
So many people came out of the woodwork that would have never dreamt about doing what they're doing now, and me included. I am someone who was in my job. I had come back from working abroad for so many years, and I had done my course, worked really hard, got my job, and really working hard and getting permanency in a school so I could work in a school all my life and then retire. And I was thinking I'm the happiest I could be. And then coming into this year, not knowing what was out there, not knowing how happy I could be. And this year has just been like every day is like winning the lottery, and it's just been incredible. But so many people are in the same position where they're actually doing stuff they really love now, not just a job that they liked. Like, people are building careers off stuff they're really passionate and really love, whether it's makeup artistry or content creation or comedy or hairstyling or whatever. But so many people have just come out of the woodwork from lockdown, and they've built careers off something they could have never imagined, all because we were stuck in the house and stopped caring what people thought.
Yeah. How long were you in SNA in Ireland for?
So it was years kind of in between different settings in schools. I started off working in a creche, and then I was in a Montessori, and I used to work from like 8 to 6 every day with children of different special needs. And then I went into units where there were specifically autism units, working with maybe only 5 children, but I'd be assigned to one. Then I went into primary, working in inclusive settings, and then secondary, similar settings. So I worked with literally every additional need you can imagine, and all types of students from 3 right up to 18. So it was a very enjoyable job. Every day was very different. I might have been assigned to one student for a couple of months, and then I'd be moved somewhere else, and it would be a new challenge. But sometimes the children had no movement. They might be a teenager that would need nappies changed throughout the day, or then I might have someone who's just completely one of the most intelligent people face to face you would ever speak to, but they might have additional needs that are kind of unseen, or you mightn't understand what they are to the naked eye. But it was, every day was something different, and I absolutely loved the job and met some of the most interesting students, like some of whom I kept in contact with when I even left. They were like, I would consider them friends. So I was incredibly lucky to get to do it for so long, and I've definitely taken it into the kind of content that I'm creating now involving Oisin. And as I mentioned to you before we started, I'm hoping to do some children's books next year and bring disability to the mainstream more and more. Because the messages, the most enjoyable messages I get aren't the ones like, oh, that was a really funny skit, or I laughed at your joke. It's the ones that are saying, my son has autism as well, and this, seeing this online and seeing how positive it is and bringing it to the mainstream is lovely. So they're amazing.
Who is Oisin?
So Oisin is my nephew. He is 17. He has cerebral palsy, and he features in my content probably more than anyone else. And he's just a bright light. Like, the most simplistic things make Oisin happy, and that everyone can see the joy in, like, him getting a biscuit, or him getting a video off Miss Hooley, or going to McDonald's and get chicken nuggets and chips and coke. It's just really simplistic things that bring him such joy, and that makes your problems seem a lot smaller than they are.
Tell us about Oisin's character then.
So he, what you see online is him. He's just constantly, constantly happy. He absolutely adores Ballymore, Miss Hooley. He gets very obsessive over things, and that's probably the autism in him, where, like, he'll get fixated on something, and then until it happens, he can't move on to the next thing. So I've done different things over the last few years. Like, he was really obsessed with postmen for a spell. So I organized a postman outfit, a post van, and we went to the post office, dressed him up as a postman, and we went around the whole post office, saw how it all worked. And then after that, he was on to the next thing. He wanted to sing in Croke Park. So we organized a tour in Croke Park. We brought him up, we got him a microphone, got him onto the middle of the pitch, and he sang in Croke Park. And then we went on to the next thing, and it was Miss Hooley. For the last 2 years, it's been Miss Hooley. So we've organized FaceTime calls and videos, and I'm hoping this year for his 18th birthday to actually get them face to face. But this is the longest fixation he's had on anything.
Where does Miss Hooley live?
So Miss Hooley was a character in Ballymore. Her name is Jules, and she's, that character was 20 years ago. Ballymore is an ancient show.
Oh, I'm not familiar with it. Sorry,
it's an ancient show from the 90s or early 2000s. Okay. But Oisin found it on YouTube and he watches it. But this a gorgeous woman constantly sends Oisin texts and updates and videos and stuff, and she's just goes above and beyond, which is incredible.
And is it in Ireland?
No, she's from Glasgow.
Okay, right.
Yeah, so we're hoping to get them face to face for his 18th birthday this year.
Wow.
Yeah, that would be incredible.
And so what's next, do you think, or have you any inkling of what he might?
It could be anything. Hopefully he wants to go to Disneyland or something. You know,
yeah. Hopefully a cruise in the Mediterranean, yeah, whatever, for 10 nights.
The Maldives for a week, I don't know.
Do you ever set him up for things? Like,
oh, we often try.
We got you a little cruise ship for Christmas here. Do you like cruise ships?
Yeah. Oisin is very much so, he wants what he wants, and it'll be something so extravagant that you think, how in the name of God am I going to get him onto the pitch at Croke Park? Or it'll be something as easy as heading to the post office. So we try and make his wishes come true every year.
And is that where your grow for special needs assisting came from?
Absolutely. I've always, as I say, I used to teach dancing, so I work with kids there. But Oisin especially, me and him from right off the bat had a very, very close bond. And the family will say that it was just something about me that Oisin really gravitated towards. He loved spending time with me, and he was always very happy. And I think that awakened something in me where it was probably one of the first times in my life I was like, I really want to make someone other than myself happy. So I did whatever I could. And that's still in me now, that I still try and do these extravagant things for him. But it was just such a powerful thing where I was like, I need to make this boy's life as happy and as comfortable as it can be, because it's already so uncomfortable. So I found, a new love for that, in that I can do this not just for Oisin. If I do this course, I can do that for a multitude of children and for so many different types. Where I've worked with a young girl with Down syndrome who was the loveliest human being. And literally every day for maybe 3 months, all we did was play hide and seek. Because that's what she wanted to do. And I got to the stage, I was like, oh, not again. But I would go, okay, yes. And I would get excited, but let's do it. So there's so many things you can do for people to just make them happy. And I try and take that into my everyday life. And my content kind of shows that, because I never post anything political. I never post anything controversial. It's just every day I just try and put up something positive. And that's what I try and do when I was in SNA, I suppose. So I'm trying to carry that on.
So it was a huge decision then to leave your job, leave your day job, your security, your regular income, and go full time into being a content creator.
How many months
were you toying with the idea?
So I suppose I'd been making money as a content creator for maybe 8 or 9 months. Decent money, like money that you could probably live on. And other people in my position had probably left before they were in the position I was in. But because I'm more of an adult, I suppose, and I saw the younger creators going full-time at it, but they're in their 20s and they don't have an engagement or a marriage to worry about, and they're not in their later 30s thinking maybe my head's a bit more screwed on. I thought, this is a bit of a bubble. It's not going to last forever. I didn't have a huge amount of confidence in myself that I was going to be as relevant as I was this year. And I suppose it was before leaving work. I hadn't really had any of the stuff I've done this year, the amazing opportunities and the travel and the TV. And so it was still scary, but I was busy enough that I thought, you know what, if I don't leave now, I'll never leave. I was getting plenty of ad work on Instagram and stuff, and I had money tucked away. And I says, if I go at it now for the rest of this year, say, so I left in May and I said, I'll give myself to December. If it's drying up, I'll go back to work. And it was the best thing I ever did, because as soon as I left, the opportunities were just, they came flooding in. It was almost like a big breaking story around the country that SNA has left his job, and brands saw that, and then it just got busier and busier. I ended up going to Australia and South Africa, and the wedding went amazingly, and then I had Netflix, and it's been a crazy, crazy year.
That is incredible. What have some of the biggest learnings been since you've become a full-time content creator? Because I think from outside looking in, people think, oh, sure, look, an agent comes along and you just get all these gigs and you don't have to go looking and there's no real work to it. What have some of your biggest learnings been?
I think if you do sit around and wait for stuff to happen, there's a small chance that, or a large chance that it probably won't happen. But when you actually go out and chase the things you're after, there's a big chance of things happening. I wasn't shy about chasing my dreams. I suppose this year I messaged the Lad Bible, said, hi, this is my TikTok, I want to be a presenter, any work for me. Messaged Virgin Media, said the same thing. I saw other people working with JD doing Vox Pops. I says, I'm doing this with the Lad Bible now, do you want me to do it with you as well?
So you're actively doing this,
I'm literally messaging these brands, these TV outlets, and saying, this is where I want to be, I can do this, give me a shot, give me a screen test. And off the back of that, I was getting them. And then I had the BBC get in touch. I had JD take me to Australia. I had BMW take me to South Africa. I've worked with the Lad Bible. I've interviewed Liam Neeson. I've got my own slot now in Ireland AM. I'm getting radio offers. That's all coming off me saying, I want this. How do I get it? Putting a plan in place, implementing it. And then when I'm in the situations, then performing as I know I can. I'm good on the camera. I'm quick. Implement that now, and then you'll get more offers. And that's what's happened. The more I'm doing, the more offers I'm getting. But I'm kicking my doors down and saying, give me a shot. And when I get them, then I know I can do well in them.
That's incredible, because from outside looking in, I'm sure people assume, oh, there's your man and he just gets a load of views and then he gets offered whatever he wants. But you have been kicking down doors harder than anyone.
But I have the content there to back it up as well. It's not a case of I'm sitting around scratching and saying, oh, I'd love to do this, maybe I'll message them. I'm putting in the work on the off days and creating the content and getting the viral videos and making myself a recognizable face, I suppose. But then at the same time, I want more. Like a lot of people would be, I suppose, content. I'm extremely content in the year that I've had, and I'm so, so grateful for it. And I'm under no illusions that it mightn't progress as it has been as quickly this year. But I have a plan in place now for next year as well, that I want to implement these things and get myself in front of the right people to keep progressing in the career I've had. But yeah, it hasn't been easy. I've worked extremely hard. It hasn't just been all thrown on my lap.
About 6 months ago, you made a comment to me as well. It might have even been longer than 6 months ago. It might have been 12 months ago. I think you made a comment to me saying, I'm just going to say yes to everything for this year. And that's how you attacked this year. You said, I'm going to say yes to everything.
Yeah.
How did that work out for you?
Amazingly. As I say, like 2 or 3 years ago, I remember I was asked to do some stand-up comedy in front of 50 people on a Zoom in lockdown, and it terrified me.
Tough gig.
And I said, that's
tough gig for a seasoned comedian.
But literally, it was like, he said, it's more so comedians that you're going to be doing in front of. What we all do is test out each other's material and it'll be fun, blah, blah. And I was like, God, no. I couldn't possibly do stand-up. He's like, but you're so funny and your tics are so funny. No, my God, absolutely not. This year, the BBC messaged me, Eric, we want you to do stand-up in front of 200 people, live audience. Yeah, okay, let's do it. And in doing that, I met some amazing creators. I was mentored by some amazing comedians. I worked with the BBC. I did the live stand-up, went incredibly, and got more opportunities off the back of that as well. So, like, saying yes to these things, things I would normally be terrified of doing, have put me in positions that I couldn't even have dreamed of being. And as well with the presenting stuff a couple of years ago, I would have never, ever agreed or put myself forward for something that I was scared to do, like a Vox, like interviewing people in the street. I've never done that before, but I did this year. Now, that's like come so naturally to me now. I wouldn't even bat an eyelid about doing something like that. So it's when you put yourself out of your comfort zone and you realize your capabilities, that's, I suppose, more opportunities came my way then. And it's only made me want to do that more now. I love being scared to do something now, because things that I was terrified to do a couple of years ago, now I do so, so comfortably. Like going on Ireland AM now, I sat down on the couch with Tommy Bowen, Myrne, and we were, and Niamh was backstage watching us. And she was so scared and nervous. We were about to go on. It was 10 seconds left and we were all still chatting. She was like, I can't believe you were so comfortable. And I didn't even think about it. I'm not nervous to go on television anymore.
Brilliant.
In front of however many people. So now I'm just looking for the next thing that terrifies me, but then I become comfortable with. And I don't know what that's even going to be. I'd love to maybe jump into acting or do more presenting scarier scenarios. So it's just looking for that next fix. It's almost like you're an addict looking for your next fix of getting out of your comfort zone, I suppose.
I love that. And I've just had a flashback there to just this time last year. I think it was 2 weeks ago last year, you and I were walking up Shop Street in Galway and you were doing the, hello, I'm Eric Roberts and this is Galway and this is Christmas Markets. And you were approaching people on the street, asking them to be in a video. But that was a really awkward thing to do. Do you know, just approaching a stranger saying, how are you doing? Will you be in a video? Do you remember at that time feeling awkward about approaching people?
Oh, terrified, absolutely. Yeah. And like, getting Niamh would be recording the takes and I'd say, oh, record it again, and I'd get awkward and be panicky, whereas now I'd happily go out and do it. There's not as much fear there, and that's just from repetitively doing these things. And I suppose you learn as you go as well. And the biggest takeaway I've had from the last couple of years is that no one cares what you're doing. No one really cares what you're at. And when you realise that, the less you care, I suppose, what you're putting out of yourself. You try new things. Do you know what I mean? And that's something that stuck with me over the last couple of years. I love putting myself out of my comfort zone now, and there's very little that will scare me if I think it's going to be funny or I think if it's going to benefit someone else. So I say, fuck it, yeah.
No one cares.
No one cares.
When you said there, you said yes to everything and it opened up all these doors and it was fantastic and you've had the best year of your life. How close were you to burnout then? Like, what were the negatives? Or you speak very positively on your page and everything's always excellent and everything's amazing and everything's fantastic. What were the negatives?
It's only in the last 2 months. Like, I wouldn't have complained once all year. It's only in the last 2 months where I have been working really hard to the point where every day is something. And I wouldn't say I was complaining, but one of the things I realized was after about 2 weeks of doing stuff, I stopped and I was like, I couldn't even tell you what I did the last 2 weeks. And normally I'm so grateful and so excited to be doing the things I'm doing. But there was a period of time where I went and played in Stamford Bridge and then I flew back and I did the BBC and then I went to an event in Dublin. And then I was thinking, I haven't even thought about Stamford Bridge there. Like, I should be really, really enjoying these things. But I'm like, right, what's next? And you're doing too many things to the point where you can't even enjoy the stuff you're doing. So like, even when I went to South Africa with BMW, that was a life-changing trip. It was absolutely incredible. But I came back and I had 4 jobs on. And by the time I got home, Mum and Dad were like, how's South Africa? I was like, Jack, I can't even, when was that? And you're alluding the fact that you're doing these mental things that no one should be doing. Like, crazy things that if you told me 3 or 4 years ago, what? There's no possible way I'd be doing that. To you're almost doing too much, you can't even really enjoy the stuff you're doing. So I think coming into next year, I'll be a bit more selective, because you can burn yourself out. If you're doing 5 things in a week and they're all crazy, crazy things to the point where you're not even appreciating them. So incredibly grateful to be getting the opportunities, but I need to sit down and remind myself how lucky I am to be doing them, because I would never want to become one of those people where it's like, oh, I don't care. Yeah, it's just, I'm and doing that for a bit of money. Like, I love everything I'm doing, and I want to keep that for as long as I can.
Do you ever suffer with a bit of social anxiety now that you're very well known? And
I go out less. I used to go out every weekend, and maybe that's because I'm getting older, but like, I go out less and less at home, I suppose, because there is the support up here is incredible, but you do get that small hometown mentality from a select few, more often than not, in the dwelling halls where people are drunk, like, oh, there's that dickhead that makes them videos, kind of.
It's a tricky thing, and it's a tricky thing to speak about. You don't want to sound like you're up your own hole, but I've often spoke about this. I am afraid to be out after 1 o'clock.
Mm.
I feel that after 1 o'clock, somebody's going to piss you off.
Yeah.
And there's just somebody waiting to annoy you.
I think people have this false sense of security with you that they know, like, it's me.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, Eric, it's me.
Yeah, yeah.
I've never seen you before. But because they've followed you for 2 years, there's almost this understanding that, like, you must know me.
Yeah.
And they'll come up and grab you and hug you.
There is a very familiarness to it, like a familiarity, where they come up as if they know that they're your best friend. Yeah,
and can do whatever they want, like give you a dig in the ribs. Like, hey, you man, it's me. Like, it's strange. So that took some getting used to. But I find, no matter where I go now, it is very, very nice interactions. And I'm so lucky as well in that, as I said, I'm not very controversial. I'm not very political. Everything I put up is just to get a quick, cheap laugh. So in that sense, I don't get a lot of hate. I very rarely get any sort of negative comments. And that's similar when I go out. A lot of people are just like, oh, I like your videos. And also, I'm lucky in the sense that I've been out with, like, Protein Boar, and I've been out with Miriam, and I've been out with them. They get hounded. Mm. They can't actually go to normal places because their demographic is like that 16 to 25. My demographic is like 25 to 40. And it's always like, how are you getting on? I follow you.
Oh, yeah.
And a thumbs up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, how are you? That's
love
me.
Love your page.
What's your name again, Eric? Oh, I've seen your stuff yet. Yeah. So it's always nice interactions. I would hate to not be able to walk down the street. And I don't think I would ever want that level of stardom where you can't go out the front door, go to the cinema without getting bombarded. So I'm glad I appeal to a higher demographic.
The most common thing that's said to me is, my mum follows you. Or, my mum loves you.
Yeah, and it might be a 30-year-old person like, oh, my mum loves your stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
I was in Dublin actually one day with Protein Bar, James Doyle Fitness. If you don't know him, he's huge on TikTok, huge on Instagram. But I actually saw somebody walking into a wall looking at him. We were walking out of a shop, and this young fella, he was only 16 or 17, he was walking into the shop, and he walked into the wall because he was looking back. He's like, is that him?
Yeah.
Bang, straight into the wall.
He was stepping about a Leicester Picnic with the balaclava on. And even though he had the balaclava on, people still knew it was him chasing him down.
Like, look at the arms on him.
Oh,
his arms are bigger than my thighs. Yeah.
But he's lovely, and he's got his head screwed on so well. He's only 21. And we've had so many conversations, like me and you have had, about business and about how he can progress. And I suppose there's two sides to it. There's the PR side, and then there's having a big following.
Mm.
And I think I've done quite well at worming my way into the PR side of things, where I'm quite sellable and stuff. And we had loads of conversations about that too. And you'll know as well, like, it's a dog eat dog industry. Like,
yeah, but there's something very genuine about him as well.
Yeah,
and
100%.
he is a gentleman behind it all. And I know he comes on and, you know, plays up the aegidness, kind of like, here I am and I'm eating steak and I'm, you know, building muscle.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a shrewd operator behind it all.
Oh, he is. He's an absolute operator.
And
yeah, that's what I mean. It's a new wave of influencer. Like, yeah. They all have their heads screwed on.
And you were talking there about going out. It is difficult to go out, and it's difficult to speak about because, like, again, you don't want to sound like you're up your own arse, but you can't go anywhere. You know, I know you've a huge following, but even, say, for instance, if you've 500,000 followers, it doesn't mean that 500,000 people recognize you. It means 5 million people recognize you. It's only 500,000 that are following you.
Mm.
But everyone knows your face.
Yeah.
Or everyone will give you a second take and go, they've got a video on WhatsApp or TikTok, or they've seen you somewhere.
Yeah.
So everywhere you go now, it's that kind of second look. It's like, how do I know him?
Yeah. It's funny because I would go out in spells. Like, it might seem like I'm out quite a bit because I'm going to events and stuff. But when you're going to the events, it's only really other people that are in the industry that are there. But when maybe once every few months, I'll actually go out on the town and stuff. And
I was then, into the wild.
Yeah. You notice it gets more and more, I suppose, every time you do it, and especially with Netflix. I was out there a couple of weeks ago. I was actually filming an ad for Rockshore, and we went to a pub and we had a couple of pints. And I says, we'll go out for a couple more. And we went up the street, walked into a pub that I thought would be quite quiet because there was university students in the one below. Mm. And a few people asked for photos, and he says, come on, we'll get out of here. We'll go to a quiet pub. And we walked in. And within 2 seconds, someone shouted from the other end of the bar, player 215.
No
way. And the whole bar turned around. And I was like, how was it, man? And it was almost like I was doing an interview from across the bar and the whole bar was involved.
Wow.
What was your man like? I was like, yeah, he's a bit of a feckin' EG. Yeah. I was like, oh, we have to get out of here. And went somewhere else. It's funny when it happens. And I think Niamh has no idea about it. Like, Niamh very rarely would come out with me and stuff, but when we are out then and someone recognises me, it's like, oh my God, that's crazy. That person knew who you were. I'm like, that actually happens a bit, you know? Yeah. She's like, oh no. Like, she doesn't get it. And even the lads, when that happened, they were like, geez, that's mental. They know who you are. So it's getting more and more, and I don't think I'll ever get used to it, but I really, really enjoy it when it happens.
Do you get the messages? So you might be sitting in a coffee shop and then you get a message 10 minutes later saying, Howie, I saw you in the coffee shop.
I get notes left on my car sometimes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Phone numbers.
Yeah.
Pair of knickers.
Tickets from the ticket man.
Do you think it's harder to be successful when you're from the northwest coast of Ireland? Is that a hindrance?
I think it's kind of added to my appeal. Like, I'm like Mr. Donegal, I suppose.
Well, it's added because you're beautiful and you have a lovely accent.
Oh, well, I don't know about that.
No, let's just call a spade here, you know, and I'm saying that in the most heterosexual way ever. You're
with your hand on my leg.
Is this uncomfortable? Do you not want it there? You're a very, very handsome man, and then you have the beautiful accent to go with it. Like, sure, that's win-win straight away.
Yeah.
But I mean, living on the northwest coast of Ireland, has it been a hindrance in any way?
It's been a hindrance for work because all the work's in Dublin and I don't see Niamh a lot. Like, if I'm working, I could be away 3 or 4 days a week. All the shoots are in Dublin, all the events are in Dublin, and for a long time I was going to all these events, and it was totally unpaid, but it was just to network, because you do need to network in this industry, meet the right people, meet the people that are booking the influencers and get in front of them and say you want to be here and doing this and blah blah blah. So I did spend a lot of time traveling up and down. Now I try and only do it if it's a job and there's money happening, and because it's just too much traveling. So I suppose being up here and all the work being down there, that's the hindrance. But for content, I don't think so at all, because I love where I live. I create loads of content around travel in Donegal. I promote loads of businesses totally for free. If I'm going somewhere, eating somewhere, drinking somewhere, I would always tag them. Yeah. Like, I love promoting Donegal, and my favorite ever campaign was the Donegal campaign. Like, showing off where we live, and I got to go to places I hadn't even been in Donegal. So I love living up here, and also there's not really any competition. There's myself, Daniel O'Donnell, and Donegal Daddy. We're the only three up here, do you know what I mean? So it's great. There's not a huge amount of competition, whereas in Dublin, it's a cesspool of influencers.
Yeah.
So I also enjoy that aspect of it.
Wow, you, Donegal Daddy, and Daniel O'Donnell. That is a podcast I'd love to hear.
The three of us.
Yeah.
The tripod.
The thing about tagging businesses as well, like, and I used to really, like, I used to love Instagram when I had 5, 6, 10,000 followers, and it was just a really enjoyable time, and you could go in and you could tag people and you could have the crack and you could do whatever you're doing. Now, I think when you have a big following and you tag somebody, there's people out there that think, oh, he's getting paid for that, or he's looking for a free lunch now, or when you're genuinely just trying to help and be supportive and show where you are that day. And I do it as well. I tag wherever I go to eat, but there's always that underlying element of, oh, look at your man, they're looking for a free lunch. Or
I think people just hate to see people doing well, and that's the thing. There's definitely a glass ceiling. Hmm. Where once you reach a certain level, there's always going to be someone that, oh, just look at your man, now he's begging it there, like.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm the same as you. It's just a genuine thing where I try and keep everything as organic as I can keep it. Even when I'm doing ads, I'm lucky now that I get, they don't look as much like ads. Normally, years ago, I would get a brief. This is what we want you to do. This, say this line here. Now it's brands will say, Eric, make a video in your style. And I can kind of incorporate that into my own content. And that's the way I keep my stories as well. But I hate pushing paid stuff on people, and I'm quite upfront about when they are ads.
Yeah,
like you'll include everything in your captions and stuff like that there, but I try and make my page not very selly because I hate being fucking sold stuff as well. Like,
right, the Donegal campaign then, so you starred in this new Discover Donegal video, and the theme of that was you're trying to tell people that it's so beautiful, don't come here, you want to leave it unspoiled.
Yeah,
how was that?
It was amazing. When I was contacted about it, they said there was 15 of them sitting around the boardroom talking about this campaign, who would be right for it. And someone was like, this is Eric Roberts. And they sort of wrote a script then around me, which is crazy to think about. Like, it was sarcastic and self-deprecating and embarrassing, just everything that I am, all the stuff that I would post on a regular basis. So when I heard that there was directors and producers and extras and cameramen and sound men, and it was all based around me, that was so surreal, and I was so incredibly grateful to do it, and it was the most fun I've had on a shoot. It was very, very hard at times. We were standing, when we did that sea stack climbing bit, we were standing on the side of that mountain for 2 hours in the piss and rain, trying to get a 1 second shot of me saying, no idea, like 2 hours. And right, I came off the thing and they were like, are you okay? And I was like, I'm grand, yeah, trying to be positive about it, but it was brutal. But then the next day we went and we were filming in the pub, and there was like 10 extras. And in between takes, they all knew I was the star of the ad and getting the close-ups. And they're like, how long have you been acting? And I was like, about 2 days. So that was amazing as well. But getting to do that was incredible. And again, it gave me a taste saying, I want to do this again. I want to be in more ads. What can I do next? So I'm hoping to do some acting courses in the new year and see how that is. But it was just so fun. It was like a very full circle moment, I suppose, putting up loads of Donegal content over the last couple of years, and then all of a sudden I missed Mr. Donegal and the huge Donegal campaign, so it was great. And Mum and Dad got to come to the premiere of it, and all the mayor of Donegal was there, and all the directors.
Donegal has a mayor?
It does, yeah, apparently.
I never knew that. Yeah. Whoa.
He was either the mayor or he had some nice jewellery.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he's a mayor over all of Donegal?
Yeah, he had the big,
that's
the big chain.
That's a tough gig.
Yeah, it is.
Because Donegal is huge.
Didn't know he existed until after that.
And do you ever get any hate?
Very, very rarely, which is great. And probably now after this, everyone will be like, yep.
No, they won't.
But no, but yeah, very rarely. I get comments like, the weight looks good on you, or you're looking plump. Do you know what I mean? Like silly things, things that wouldn't really bother me because...
But they don't bother you because you're secure, but...
Yeah. The only stuff that would bother me is if anyone spoke about anyone in my family.
Right.
That would be a huge no-no, and I was actually a bit hesitant to even post Oisin early on out of fear of that, because I know the internet's a fucking terrifying place.
Yeah.
But look, everyone seems to enjoy the content, and if that ever changes, then I would change the content. But at the moment, I'm quite lucky. Now, as the following grows, 100%, I get more comments.
But do you think you've weighed on?
I mean, at times throughout the year, I might have more than...
Oh, I think you're built like.
I try. Like, that's what I mean. But there might be some angled photos where there's a bit of a pouch there and stuff, which is understandable over the summer months and
depending on what you had to
eat holidays
that day.
And stuff. Yeah, exactly. But it would never stuff that would bother me. But 100%, if there was comments about my family, like my family have gotten messages, which is strange. Like some weirdo was messaging my sister.
Like what?
Like talking about me and talking about the family and stuff. They wouldn't come directly to me because I don't know if they think I won't see it or something. So they were like setting up fake accounts, messaging my family, which is so strange. And I don't like that at all. But like, she put her page in private then, kind of would stop.
Right.
But yeah, going forward, I think, I don't know how I would handle a lot of abuse. Like if there was hundreds of people being like, you're an idiot, then I'd be like, maybe I am an idiot. Do you know what I mean? I'm not sure how I would handle it.
It's amazing the amount of time that these trolls give it, and the amount of pages that they can set up, and the amount of hours they spend trolling people. Like, it's a scary world. It's a scary...
That's what I mean. They can't be right. That's why I think it doesn't bother me, because they can't really be right in the head.
No, well, they're definitely not. There's obviously something amiss, but like, lately now, that element of it terrifies me, you know? I've made this very clear, like I have fallen out of love a little bit with social media over the last few months, and like I even put up a petrol station the last day. Like I'm following the petrol prices because it's 10 cents cheaper in every other county except Mayo. I don't know why our diesel is 10 cents dearer than anywhere else. So whenever I'm traveling through a different county, I'll put up a place and it's 10 cents cheaper. So I put up a place the last day anyway, but it was one of these pay stations. There's no staff there. and then a neighbouring petrol station, two different people in two different accounts started hounding me, telling me that they don't create any jobs and I should be promoting the place up the road and not promoting this place. And whilst you're listening to this now thinking, sure, maybe they're right, I've often promoted the other place. And the first thing I wrote back was, you never slid into my DMs when I was promoting your place. And I'd often go in and I'd often talk about it for various reasons. And I'm not going to say now because it'll be very obvious, the place. But I just said to myself, that person has often seen me promoting their business and never slid into my DMs. But the second you mention the cheap diesel down the road that's cheaper than anywhere else in the county, I'm not just kind of saying here, don't go to that place. I'm just saying this is really, really cheap diesel. And they're just jumping down your throat so quickly.
The problem is you can never please everybody, but I suppose people are so passionate then when you're not pleasing them. Like, why are you saying that? You should be saying this.
Yeah.
And it's like pushing their narrative on you. It's almost to the point, Jesus, maybe I should. You almost feel guilty about it. Like, it's insane, the lack of respect some people have and think what you should be doing, when realistically you're living your own life. And
yeah. Another really interesting one I saw last week was Ekin Sue was flying from Ireland West Airport in Knock, and they took a picture of her in the airport. She's huge, like, you can say what you like about her. You might not follow the show, you might not know who she is, but she's a celebrity. She's a huge celebrity. So she was flying through our little airport and they took a picture of her and put it up on Facebook. And the first comment was, every customer should be treated the same traveling through the airport, right? So they wrote back, hi Dara, we'll take a picture of you the next time you're coming through, don't worry about it. And he wrote back, no thanks, I don't want one. So he was given out that they took a photo of Ekin Sue. Then they said, no problem, we'll take a picture of you the next time you're here. And he goes, no, I don't want to. I'm not.
Just
I don't want a photo.
Given out for the sake of giving
just
out.
Just exactly, like, given out for the sake of giving out.
A lot of people literally just want you to see what they're saying and react in some way, shape or form. I don't know if you saw last week, someone messaged me and was like, you were so shite in Squid Games. And I messaged back, thank you. And they messaged me back, just being honest, sorry, would you like to meet me for a coffee? Like, and I was in shock. I was like, who are you to be sitting there thinking this is going to work? As if I'm like, yes, let's meet for a coffee.
I just said, yeah, I'll see you in Costa Coffee, 4:30.
But can you
wear
imagine?
Something nice.
Can you imagine it? And then someone else wrote to me and he was like, yeah, nobody even saw you on Squid Games. I paused it 3 times, couldn't find you in the crowd and stuff like this. I'm like, why are you messaging me this? Like,
yeah.
How is it of any benefit to you?
Let's break that down now. Before we start talking about Squid Game, let's break it down and say, right, you were shit in Squid Game. Like, how can somebody possibly even have that opinion? You know, you go into a game, you do your best, you get as much airtime as you can or as little airtime as they give you. And that's just it. End of story.
Yeah.
You can't slide into somebody's DMs and say, you were shit in Squid Game.
Yeah. Imagine. I actually beat like 400 plus people in it, so I wasn't that shit.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's one way to look at it. I used to knock good crack out of them as well, and I still do sometimes. It's just I need a bit of I need to reset myself and find the love for it again. But lately the one that I'm getting a lot of comment on is my dog walking on the road, and I say car and she stops until the car passes, and now everyone's saying, oh, you need to have a lead, blah blah blah. So the one I knock good crack out of and that makes me smile every now and again was like, sorry, but your dog needs to have a lead, they could go out into the car and be killed. And I just write back, apology accepted, because they started with sorry.
Yeah.
And like, it has 4,500 likes and I'm just delighted that my apology accepted has 4,500 likes. And it's just it's nice being able to interact in a polite way.
Yeah. That's what I love doing. I love killing them with kindness. Yeah. Like, I'll always respond to them with thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for that. And then it's like, oh.
And there's an awful lot of people taking everything for gospel that they see online as well. And they see something online, they go, oh, that's gospel, I'm sharing that, and that's exactly what happened, and that's how it happened. Instead of going for a second, hang on now a second. You know, like, lately a thing happened down in Mayo, and there was a country music night in a local hotel. And the next day, a video went viral of this big, massive brawl in the hotel, throwing chairs. And it went around on WhatsApp going, this happened at such a one's concert. It's public knowledge. It was in the news, but I'm not going to name anyone. But it absolutely ruined the hotel for 2 or 3 days. Somebody just sent this video of somebody fighting. It turned out the fight was down in Clare 5 years ago. And somebody goes, this happened at such a country music night there in that hotel 2 nights ago. Went viral. Then all the news had to come out and say that it wasn't that hotel. That hotel, then we're getting calls. And the amount of belief, and even I heard Raybo and Kendi talking about it on their podcast, where Raybo was talking about his mom, you know, and his mom got it on a WhatsApp, and that straight away, oh, did you see what happened?
Yeah.
But it's very easy to believe, and we're very quick to believe.
People are immediate with it, like, oh, that's gospel, yeah. That's
instead happening. Of going, is that hotel? Yeah. I've been in that bar 100 times. Does that look like the bar that I have been in? People are just so quick to go, well, that's definitely what happened.
Yeah, 100%, yeah.
Yeah. Gospel. And it's like, you know, if I was at an event with a girl or I get photoed with a girl or something, well, they're definitely riding.
Yeah.
That's it. They had
sex.
It just
takes one murmur or they one had rumor sex. And that's it, yeah.
That's it. End of story.
On the gossies the next day.
I saw the photo and his hand was there on her waistband, and that means that they had sex.
Yeah.
And there's no other narrative. It doesn't
they've
matter.
They've been going out years, them two. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
B&B Homes make your dream home a reality. We do it all from start to finish. Your one-stop shop to becoming a homeowner. Log on to brbhomes.ie.
Let's talk about a Squid Game then. So what is Squid Game? What's the original Squid Game?
So it was a show set in Korea. Where people, I suppose, from underprivileged backgrounds were offered an opportunity to win millions, but they didn't know when they signed up that they were going to be murdered off one by one. It's a very gruesome and gory, I suppose, depiction, and it's all child's games. So the first game was the famous red light, green light, and people were aware then that people were getting shot. And then it's just this extremely entertaining show then.
How many people entered?
456 people, and then one survives, essentially. And the show that I took part in was a mirror image of this, except no one died, thankfully.
Right, what was the blood? Ketchup?
So I actually watched on Netflix the making of Squid Games The Challenge, and it was very entertaining, and the work they put into it was incredible. And they actually tested different squibs or blood packs for like months to see what the right one was, and the work that went into it to get the right splatter, and it was too chunky at first. And so we were all equipped with these blood packs essentially for red light, green light. And
so for the challenge then, so this is the Squid Game The Challenge. No one died. It's the same concept, same idea, same games somewhat, but obviously no one died. But how much was the prize fund?
$4.56 million. So the biggest in reality TV history, essentially, which is why it's probably one of the number one shows on the planet at the minute.
And how long were you in the game?
So I was in the game for 2 weeks.
How does it come about? How does it come about where a man from Downing's goes on to a Netflix TV show? How did that?
So there's cast and producers, and I'm not sure how many, but they're based all around the world for a show like this because it's a global show. And I was contacted by a cast and producer who followed me online. Now, having an online platform didn't help or hinder your chances of getting on the show. It just so happened that the casting people go out and look for people all around the world. And he had followed me and said, you'd be a funny character on the show. Why don't you apply? And I applied in a whim, and it was around 6 months of interviews with producers and casting calls and Zooms and what's your game plan? Tell us about yourself. What would you do with the money? And then it was whittled down from around 90,000 applicants to the 456. And we were flown to London then.
And you have to do some sort of psych test or like make sure you're all there.
You had to do medicals. You had to do psych tests. They had to background checks from 10 years ago just to make sure that you were who you say you were and you weren't like a crazy racist person and all this here. So it was a strenuous process. Like I had to go to the doctors and get physicals done, and you had to be in the right headspace for it. Like there was talks with therapists before going in, what could happen. And so, yeah, we were very well prepared going in.
Right.
But nothing could have prepared us for what we were in store for, I don't think.
And where was it filmed?
Filmed in London.
In a big, massive warehouse?
A gigantic place. You forgot where you were. You didn't know you were on TV because it was just cameras everywhere. And after Red Light, Green Light lasted 8 hours.
So it's like a big air hangar.
Yeah, essentially, yeah.
And you didn't see daylight for 2 weeks?
So there was sets and then there was the dorms. So the sets were all the games essentially, but they were incredible. Like the money spent on it was mental. And then the dorm, there was 200 beds in one room. But every time people were eliminated, they'd take beds out. So the dorm got bigger and bigger as the time went on. And when I went out, there was only 30 beds left. So it was a crazy, crazy couple of weeks. But the toughest part was the dorms. You wouldn't see daylight for days. You were sleep deprived. You were starved. Didn't know who to trust.
They didn't feed you?
Very little. Like what, plain white rice, or we get mushy porridge.
And that was part of the game plan?
That was it. They just, like, the show itself is so PG compared to what we actually went through. Like, I put up a YouTube there the last day, like a behind the scenes before going in, and then immediately after coming out, and I'm gaunt. Like, I'm so thin and pale, and my eyes are just, like, sunken. Like, I was in bits. I was in actual bits.
Did you know that going in?
Oh, absolutely not. I thought it's going to be a TV show.
You thought there'd be a bit of luxury in the background?
But I didn't think it could be as bad as it was.
Right. And did you sign your life away going in? So you basically say, right, I'm signed up.
Yeah.
Do what you want to me.
But even at that and all the scare, you were thinking they were scare tactics, and you would just think it can't be that bad. But it was worse than I could have ever imagined.
And did anyone ever complain? Had you?
Oh, God, every day. People.
Was there like welfare checks or like?
Yeah, constantly. But like people were in bits in there. Like people were falling apart. Like people were getting really chapped lips and using the condoms that were in the bathroom to rub all the lips to keep them.
Sorry,
out.
Using the what?
There was condoms in the toilets, and people used the lube and the condoms for their lips because they were so chapped. It was such a dry room. People got infections in their lips and had to leave over the back of it. Like we were banging at the doors at nighttime to feed us. Like it was brutal. Like.
Right, so there's so much here I need to process. The chapped lips, people were getting chapped lips because there was no aircon in there, was there? Or maybe
it was
too much aircon.
Just a room with no windows.
Right, and then there was condoms in the bathroom.
Condoms in the bathroom, because they obviously assumed people might have relations while in there, but everyone after 2 days was so...
Everyone hated each other.
Everyone was banjacks, no one could do anything.
Do you think anyone do the no pants dance?
I highly doubt it. With how I felt in there, I can't imagine anyone was in.
You're like, the last thing you would get is a
it
horn.
Was the last thing you were thinking of, yeah, 100%. You were just thinking about making it through the night.
Yeah, going for a posh wank, that'll be about the height of it.
Yeah.
Oh my! And was there any privacy away from the cameras where you could?
No, there was cameras in the cubicles. There was cameras. I think there was 200 plus cameras in the room, everywhere you went. So there was no spot that wasn't visible, basically.
And is there anyone that you think even kissed or had a connection or got close to each other?
I think very, very early on when there was maybe 200 of us in there, there was definitely probably people flirting and stuff. But I don't think anyone that early on.
Very quickly turned on each other.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You couldn't trust anybody. That was the hardest part. It was the fakery of it all. And I went in there, I was under no illusions what I was there for. I was there to build my profile. I had an online profile already. I wanted to go in there and be hilarious and make everyone laugh and be the funny guy and crack loads of jokes, not knowing that the show was going to be portrayed doom and gloom and not showing anyone laughing or having a good time. So I went about it tits up. Like I was holding talent shows and I was going around every single alliance and group and making them laugh, and I was the funny guy in there. And people have actually come out after the show, some big characters on the show, and said, can't believe Eric wasn't shown, he was so charismatic and funny and blah blah blah. But that's just not what they wanted depicted on the show.
Okay.
So that's why I didn't get a lot of screen time, obviously. Even though I was doing so well in the games, I came second in Red Light, Green Light. I got the umbrella, smashed it. I won my marbles game 5-0. Like, I just soared through every game.
The marbles game wasn't shown, though, was
it?
No,
it wasn't, no.
So the marble, you had to throw a marble into a pot.
Throw it into a pot, yeah. And this, I was playing an American girl, and she was like, have you played beer pong? We could try that. Knowing full well I've been in darts leagues for the last 5 years, I was like, yeah, okay, we'll play that game. And just annihilated her 5-0. But again, not like other people were like really having emotional games. And I was like, ding, ding, ding. I was like, right, next game.
And then for the cookie challenge, the umbrella was the hardest one.
Yeah.
And
I just smashed that as well.
Right.
Just chopped it out.
What was your technique with that? Were you licking the back of it like
I wasn't licking
else?
It. I spat on it like it did something to me. Like it owed me money. I was spitting on the thing. Just for about 4 or 5 minutes, just covered it and then just chopped it out like soggy biscuit, picked it out of the thing.
Were you shitting yourself?
It was terrifying, and I'm playing it down now, but like when I left, so obviously you picked a line, you got in that line, and that's the shape you ended up with.
So because some donkey at the front had to pick.
That feckin' easy, yeah.
Yeah.
So I was in my line with the only people that I spoke to in there. I was in the line with my group of friends that I had met. This was my alliance 3 or 4 days in. And I was only one of 4 out of 50 odd to do the umbrella. So all my friends were gone. So I went in there past the umbrella. I was thinking, oh my God, I have to make new friends. And I broke down, started crying. I was in bits because it was so intense in there. And I realized my friends are gone now.
Did you break down then?
When I came out of the set. So as soon as it shows me walking out after completing it. And
yeah.
The two girls go, oh, he's good. He's got through. They were some of my friends. All of them got eliminated. And I walk back in knowing that I'm on my own again. And I have to go around making new friends before the next game. Next game could be tug of war and I don't have any friends.
And you started crying.
like, I mean, hysterically crying for about 45 minutes to the point where I was inconsolable. They were bringing me water. Welfare team was over, like, patting me on the back. It'll be okay.
Did anyone try and console you?
Oh, they did.
From the game?
No, because once I had completed that task, you were brought to a room and you weren't allowed to know who else got through because it was all so cloak and daggers. So I was brought to a room and I had to sit in that room for an hour and a half by myself. But I was just on, like, in bits, like in bits.
And did you think about pulling out?
No, because not only was it I'm alone now, it was also for 8 hours. I found out I got Umbrella and then we didn't play that game for 8 hours.
Oh,
so for 8 hours,
God.
I thought to myself, fuck it, I know I'm going home. Got Umbrella. No way am I getting past Umbrella. Fuck. Second game, I'm out already. Came over here. Fuck's sake. Definitely going home. Thinking like this for 8 hours, made peace with the fact that I was going home. Sat down to do the game and we had to do it in quadrants. So it was quadrants of 10. So the first 10 people went, no one did it. The second 10 people went, no one did it. And I was thinking, fuck's sake, I'm definitely going home. It can't be done. Umbrella can't be done. Third quadrant and 2 people did it. I was like, fuck, maybe I'm not going home. Did it. And then it was that was the whole thing of, oh my God, I'm still in the game. So it was overly emotional. That no one got past it. I got past it. This is going to be huge for me, like mental.
Yeah.
So it was like, all my friends are gone. I'm alone. I made it though. I'm through. So it was this like euphoric kind of, holy shit, I'm still in the game. How far can I get? So it was scary. It was a scary time, but it was also, maybe I can go on and do well in the show. They're definitely going to show me now. I did Umbrella and it was like crazy emotions. It was crazy emotions.
And did anyone knock on the door and say, I want to go home?
Well, at that point, no, because...
There was talk of one fella saying he wanted to go home.
Yeah, so if you showed any sort of weakness, he was a lesson learned. If you showed any sort of inkling that you didn't want to be there, you were gone.
Okay.
You couldn't give anyone any reason. And a lot of the people that were shown in the first 5 episodes didn't make it to the next episodes because they were the characters.
Yeah.
You couldn't be a character. And it was one of my game plans to just... not be a big loud voice in the room. Don't nominate yourself for anything. Don't do any challenges. Don't be doing any chores. You just didn't want to be in anyone's eyesight because if you were, you were gone.
How hard was it to sleep in there?
Initially, very difficult. Initially, very, very difficult because I'm from the country. Like some people were saying, they live in the city in New York and they're used to this kind of noise and stuff. But for me,
200 people sleeping in a room.
Chatting, like whispering conversations.
Snoring, farting.
Getting up to go to the bathroom, getting up to fill their water bottles up. Like it was intense. But also... you're in London on a Netflix show and that's in your head and you're like, what's next? You couldn't, like, it was very difficult to sleep. So everyone was wrecked tired and we only got about 6 hours sleep a night or something in between games and stuff.
Did anyone completely freak out and break down and go apeshit altogether?
So people were in and out to welfare and diary rooms all the time, but as I say, no one really wanted to show any weakness and everyone knew why. It was a strange sort of thing that when you're in that situation, you're in it. Like, you're in it. You can't describe it because... you've never been in it before, but you're aware of what's going on. You're aware why you're there. But the reason it was so mentally draining was because you were constantly thinking, what can I do next? Who do I need to speak to? Have I spoke to that person over there? Maybe I've spoke to them too much. Like, it was always on. You were always switched on, which was tough.
Yeah.
And you, like, the people would like hold yoga classes that you didn't want to be a part of, but you would just in case. They'd be like, why is he sitting out? Prayer circles was like, oh, Jesus. Like, come on, y'all, let's praise the Lord. And you're standing there, oh, for fuck's
you're like, yeah, let's get involved.
Yeah.
And so, on the inside, you're like, kill me now.
Yeah. So it was stuff like that was crazy. But then we all thought Tug of War was going to be the next game. So I was going sitting beside all the muscly lads. Like,
yeah.
Oh, I bench 100 kg. What are you lads bench? And like trying to slip it into conversations. Like,
I saw that. Yeah. They were doing push ups and everything. Like,
yeah,
pumping
everyone just wanted to get through the next game. So you would use anything in your power to do it. Like, so it was just constant.
That was genius from the producer's point of view, where they thought like everyone was convinced it was tug of war.
Yeah.
And then curveball.
No one knew what was happening. It was done so incredibly well. And that's how they built the show. But when you were there, none of us knew what was going on.
Right.
We never knew what was happening, like which made it so entertaining.
Did you make any lifelong friends?
I made friends, absolutely made friends. Friends I've kept in touch with. So the Aussie lads were hilarious.
Yeah.
And the majority of the people I was friends with were cut because the people I was closest in there were the very, very, very normal people. I couldn't cope with the cringiness of the really playing the game and really getting immersed in it and stuff, which is, I suppose, silly. If you wanted to be shown on TV, that's the way to do it. But... our group, I suppose, was just like talking about what we were going to eat when we left and cracking jokes. And you know what I mean? Just totally normal stuff.
What's your favourite colour?
Yeah. Just literally like, what are you going to get to eat? Like, I'm going to get a burger.
Do you like dogs?
Yeah.
So your man then that's on the cover photo for the TV show, the American guy, was he a right pain in the hole? Did he come across your radar when you were in there?
I mean, everyone knew.
Did they?
Yeah. Everyone knew. And we all knew he was going to be the character that they've shown him as, because he was constantly being whipped in and out of the room and he was constantly getting nominated for stuff. And like
in and out of the diary room?
Yeah.
Right.
Everyone knew he was going to be a big character. It's just his persona. He had that alpha male sort of stuff where at the time it was like, it was intimidating because you didn't know whether, Jesus, maybe I should make friends with him. But
they made him out to be a bit of a dickhead, though.
He was a dickhead, like.
Right.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because he's on his TikTok now saying, I'm not a dickhead.
Oh, no, he's a dickhead.
Right.
Yeah. He was. It was hard to listen to, like. Do you know what I mean? He was the alpha male. He was overly confident. He was going to win. But, like, that's the people then you wanted to get rid of. So it was like...
Yeah.
Yeah, sure, everyone knew then.
He had a target on his back.
Exactly, yeah. You didn't want to be that guy. You didn't want to be... And it was funny because I came second in Red Lake Arena. I did the umbrella. I hammered my marbles game. I was going so under the radar, no one's really batting an eyelid, but realistically, I was doing better than everyone in all the games. But I was just portraying this like funny Irish guy, nothing to worry about. But I know for a fact, if I wasn't eliminated the way I was eliminated, I would have easily gone through the games, because I didn't really care about anyone that was left. I would have happily backstabbed. I would have happily nominated someone, roll a six, and do you know what I mean? It wouldn't have concerned me.
But you would have backstabbed anyone. Sure. Absolutely. To win 4.5 million. Sure, yeah. You'd backstab your granny.
And you'll see the people that made it to the final, you didn't see them in the first 7 episodes because they kept quiet, went under the radar.
And how were you eliminated then?
So there was 30 of us left and we had this big speech all together. Let's all look out for each other and we've all made it this far. Let's go out on our own terms in the games and let's not double cross each other. And about 20 minutes later, all the girls got together. I said, let's keep ourselves in, girls. Let's get rid of all the guys. If we can keep each other in, let's do that. Now, ones that were orchestrating this didn't care about women's rights or feminism and stuff. They just wanted to save their own backs. So what happened was then there was elimination. All 10 women made it through and 10 men were eliminated, which was horrible.
I don't understand. How did that happen?
So basically a captain was nominated and that captain had to pick one person to save.
Was that captain female?
No, that captain was male. But as soon as a female was chosen, it was woman, 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 the whole way down the line.
Oh, so one was saved and then one saved another.
Yeah, it was just like a domino effect then. All the women were saved and people were giving speeches saying, we need to even out the odds, let's save the women and all this here. And there was a couple of men saved in between, but they would have been really friendly with the girls. But essentially it panned out that 10 men were eliminated. Which was awful because I left there thinking I didn't care if you were a man or woman or black or white or whatever you were. We were all people competing. It shouldn't have mattered that I was a man. Do you know what I mean? I shouldn't have gone out on those terms. I wanted to go out in a game.
And what was their thinking behind that? They thought like women power or...
Realistically.
Was it like a strength thing?
Realistically, at the forefront of all their heads was, I want to save myself here. How can I do that? And very cleverly, they said, let's all save each other. Then we're guaranteed safety. But because there was 20 men left and 10 women, that was their excuse. Let's even out the odds, girls. Like,
just in case it was a game of tug of war or something.
Could have been anything, yeah. Right. Like, let's save each other. Whatever happens, let's save each other.
And then imagine if men did that.
That's what I said, yeah.
Imagine.
Let's get the girls out.
If the man said, right, lads, right, just don't bring any women with you.
You'd be hung.
Oh, it'd be game over. Yeah. You'd be cancelled the minute you get out of the hangar.
Yeah, and it's funny because I made a few TikToks when the show aired and I was like, what do you think? Like, if lads did that, it'd be a different story.
And what kind of response did you get?
Women go through this every day.
Okay.
Yeah. This is what we have to deal with every day. I'm like, oh, jeez. Okay. Okay, sorry.
So that was a really shit way to go then.
Yeah.
Because
it was awful.
It wasn't even a challenge. It was just that you weren't picked.
Yeah. And I had done so well to get to that stage.
Yeah.
For it to be taken away as it was.
You had it hard.
Yeah. And the response has been amazing because everyone's, even though I wasn't shown a lot, people understand that that's, I suppose, the show. So it's not like other shows where if you were on Big Brother and you weren't showing a lot of people, like you weren't even in it, blah, blah, blah. But people are like, you played a good game, kept your head down, you were doing so well. And then it was like ripped from me, basically. So it was awful.
So you got down to the final 30.
Final 30, yeah.
Wow, that's impressive. And then when it came to watching the show, did you have like a night with the family?
No, I didn't, because I don't know if it was an anxiety thing. I just wanted to sit myself and watch it.
Did you watch it on your own?
I wasn't scared of what was going to be shown, or I didn't know how much or how little I was going to be shown on it. And I knew I conducted myself in a way that I wouldn't be worried about what happened.
Firstly, how many months are you waiting for this to air?
So January, so like
11. Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's 11 months of anxiousness.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't that. It was more excitement knowing there was a couple of things that I was fearful they might show. Moments of weakness.
Go on.
And all year I thought about how I can spin. If they do show this, what am I going to do?
Like what?
This is awful. So there was one real moment of weakness during my elimination where I was looking around. I was thinking, who could possibly save me now? Trying to do the math in my head. And I thought to myself, this guy behind me is probably going to get picked because his friends are up there. So I turned to him and I looked him like dead in the eye and I mouthed at him. I was like, pick me. And he went, he was like, what? I was like, fucking pick me if you get picked.
Right.
And he was in shock because I never really spoke to him before. And like just a pure desperation. He was like, what? What are you, what? I was like, pick me if you get picked. He didn't know. It was so awkward. And I turned back around and I realized what I've done. I was like, oh my God, this is going to be shown on television.
Were you not allowed to speak? Or
like no one was really talking. It was so tense. Like if you see, it was so incredibly tense. But then obviously I wasn't saved and I left and I went, why did I do that? If they show me begging to be saved.
Oh, that's basic. Like, sure.
That was one of my biggest fears. I knew I conducted myself normally.
That's just trying to survive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I did get to that. It got to the point where you forgot you were on TV. You just want, all that mattered was staying in here. All that mattered was surviving. Like
for a minute there, I thought you were going to say you were chatting up some guy or something to try and like, you know, you're really handsome.
Yeah, you're sexy, man. Keep me in.
If that's all you had to worry about. So when it aired then on Netflix, you sat down here on your own and watched it.
We got up at 8 o'clock because I had a few jobs on that week. So I wanted to binge it as quickly as I could. I watched all 5 episodes the first day it came out, myself and Eve. And it was fun, like trying to spot yourself. And I knew I wouldn't be in it too much early on because I suppose I was just keeping my head down. Do you know what I mean?
And then after watching the 5 episodes, then were you a bit sad, like, or were you a bit disappointed?
It was funny because I had hoped to be shown more, but I understand why I wasn't. Mm. It's totally understandable because in there I didn't want to be seen. Do you know what I mean? So I can't really blame them for not putting me in it. I didn't nominate myself for anything.
You had eyes on the prize,
exactly.
And you weren't in it.
I was there to win, but. Yeah. When I wasn't trying to win the money in the dorms, I was going around everybody cracking jokes and being very funny and positive, and I didn't want it to seem like it was getting to me. I wanted to be that funny character on the show, thinking that would translate then into real life and people would think, this guy's funny, let's follow him.
Yeah.
But they didn't show any of the funny stuff. They didn't show anything entertaining in the dorms.
I saw a quick snippet of you giving a dance class.
That's the stuff I was doing. I was holding classes and I was telling jokes and I was putting on talent shows. And like I held a talent show for about 100 people. I sat everyone down and I went out into the middle of the floor and I was like, hello, I'm Eric Roberts. I'm a contestant from Ireland. Are we all happy to be here? Like with a pretend banana microphone. I was like, we're going to have a talent show. All the talented people go to this side of the room. All the spectators go to this side of the room. And I orchestrated the whole thing. Went on for about an hour. And I got people's names. Someone called Rose came up and I says, there's no thorns on this flower here. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Rose. And she would come out and sing and then dance. Like, this was a huge thing in the dorm. Everyone thought this was going to be a whole episode in itself. Wow. People came up to me after saying that you were the best part of the whole talent show presenting it. And I'd never done any presenting before this. And like, people have come on after saying, like, answering questions, like some of the huge characters in the show. Yeah. And they were saying one thing they should have showed with the talent show. That was sick, man. That was a great day.
I seen that, yeah.
So it was great. Like, that was the kind of stuff I was thinking, this is going to be my moment. But it was just all.
Well, you're lucky that you're secure in your own head then, that you didn't let it affect you too much. But it must have been a bit disappointing to be sitting here, like, after bigging it up. And like, you're the face of it in Ireland. Like, yeah. It's safe to say there is another Irish guy, but I think he identifies as being British, does he?
I'm not sure what he identifies as.
Like, it's so American strange British, because he's like a kind of a Conor McGregor from Wish sort of character.
I mean, Mikey was a funny character. Mike is actually, he's a lovely, lovely guy. We just didn't gravitate towards each other in there, which is strange for two Irish people.
Like, he has the red beard and he comes on and he goes, I'm going to eliminate anyone that gets in my way.
Like, yeah.
But then it comes up as like Mikey from Belfast.
It was funny. Mikey played a good game. He played a better game than I did to get on TV. I suppose Netflix wanted a Mikey, not an Eric, because he was game playing and backstabbing and alliance, and I just wasn't in me to do that.
Right.
It was too cringy. I couldn't do it. And there, he could have saved me as well in the elimination. He didn't save someone that I suppose he was closer to in there, which is totally understandable. I probably wouldn't have saved Mikey if I was up there. Do you know what I mean? We just weren't that close.
But you're like Mr. Ireland. He's not.
Yeah, I suppose because he's from Belfast or I don't know what it is. Like, I'm very, very lucky in the sense that I have a platform already. A lot of people are going on to that show hoping to build what I have already. So I can't be too sore.
But he has a big platform as well.
He does. He's big on TikTok. He's about 300,000 on
TikTok. Is he a gamer or something?
He does Twitch and he does a lot of feminist women's content. It's hard to...
What do you mean?
...explain. He's like a women's activist.
Oh, right. Yeah, I didn't know that.
You'd have to see it.
I just thought he was some sort of gamer. But that's... So that what I love about this story is, right, you went on Netflix. It was the worst experience of your life. You're in this air hanger for 2 weeks. You didn't eat. You didn't sleep. You came home. You're 11 months waiting for the TV show to come on. You sit here. You turn on Netflix and then you watch 5 episodes here with your beautiful wife and you're going, fuck, they didn't show me at all. But the positives are you've been on every TV and radio station and newspaper in the whole country.
Yeah.
And like, I just love that story because it's turning a somewhat a negative thing into a positive.
Yeah.
You've nailed the PR side of things.
I think with this show as well, I think people have a better understanding that it's not like any other reality show that's come before. It's 456 people. I think they showed around 10 people. So, I mean, I'm one of the unlucky ones that wasn't shown out of 446 other people. There was 10 characters, more or less all American, who fit the narrative, I suppose, of the show they were trying to put out. I did very, very well in the games. I didn't let myself down, I suppose. I wasn't acting up for the camera. And people understand how well I did to get as far as I did. So because I didn't get a lot of airtime, yes, I'm disappointed. But everyone knows how far I got. Everyone knows how well I did in the actual competition.
Yeah.
And that's the coverage I'm getting, I suppose. And because of the platform I had already, and I'm involved in the biggest show on the planet, there's that too. Do you know what I mean? So it's disappointing that I would have, of course, loved more airtime. But the way to get that airtime, I wouldn't have been comfortable doing that.
Okay.
Wouldn't have been me.
Yeah. There's a term for that, isn't there? The integrity over prosperity. Something along those lines. Do you think you've gained followers from it?
I definitely have on TikTok. I've gained around 30,000 followers on TikTok just from talking about behind the scenes because people are extremely interested to hear what happened that people didn't see, I suppose.
What's interesting about that, and if you're not on TikTok, I watched your video of you saying, because I follow you on TikTok, so I watched your video saying, this is what happened behind the scenes. And now that's all I'm getting is contestants that I didn't even see in the show coming up going, oh, this is what happened behind the scenes.
And I suppose everyone jumped on that bandwagon because obviously there's so many contestants that weren't shown. So the only sort of clout they're going to get off it is by saying, I was on it, this is what happened.
What about this guy that said he snuck his phone in, which he clearly didn't because somebody was videoing him putting on his...
So I think they invited influencers to the set and they were allowed to take their phones or something. So this was like a different time period altogether. This wasn't when we were filming, obviously.
I know that it was one of the most successful TV shows Netflix has ever produced, but from a viewer point of view, it was a bit annoying the way they only showed the same 10 people. Now, I don't know if I'm saying that with my hat on that I'm looking for my friend Eric, or am I saying it from, I'm just like, oh, this, not this gobshite again.
Yeah.
But I mean, is that why it worked? Because they kept playing...
Like, when they were doing this, it's funny because they had no possible way to know who their characters were going to be prior to filming, other than the son and the mother. So, obviously, they knew who was coming to the show. They had an idea who the outlandish personalities were and stuff. So, for that first game, 456 of us taking part, they mic'd up 20 people. All the rest of us had fake mics on. So they took a stab in the dark and mic'd up 20 people. I think maybe 14 of the people that they mic'd up got eliminated on the first day. The girl that squatted down, she was eliminated.
Oh, yeah.
There was another woman that she was the first person to be eliminated. They did like a backstory on her, but she was first to go. So they wanted this thing of who you thought at home the characters are going to be. They're eliminated. They're gone. And it's like, oh, God, I thought they were going to be a big character on the show. So they took a stab in the dark with the mother and son, which turned out to be an incredible story. They both made it across the line. They get as far as marbles together and stuff. But at the time, they didn't know who their characters were going to be. So that's why it took so long to get the filming, because you have to get a shot of all 456 people in case one of these is going to win.
Yeah.
So we need to have shots of them. So they built the storyline as they went. Certain things happened in the challenges where you'd nominate yourself And then they'd like pull him out for an interview in the dining room. Let's see how he feels right now in this moment.
Okay.
They're trying to build the story as they went. So obviously the 10 characters they had were the people that they thought they could got a story out of. The rest of us were just kind of getting through day to day.
Were you in the diary room much?
About 10 times. Yeah. For the first week I wasn't in once because I wasn't doing challenges or chores or I was getting through things and stuff. But
how was that in your own head? You're sitting there going, they have never called me in once.
It got to you, definitely.
Yeah.
When you saw other people in and out all the time, you were thinking, why, fuck, I've come over here and maybe I'm missing a trick. What am I supposed to be doing? But then eventually when I said to myself, if I keep getting through these games, they'll eventually have to call me in. And that's what happened.
So when you went into this dorm, that's it. They completely cut you off from the outside world. No one came in after the show and said, how are you getting on, guys?
No.
Everyone happy out?
Totally immersive.
It was just, here you go. Good luck and fuck you.
Yeah.
Wow.
Totally immersive. There was times when people would come in from the outside wearing tracksuits as if they were contestants, but they'd have earpieces on and they would walk around and they would go, number 24, you have to go to the diary room. And then they would walk you out. So that's how it happened. That's how you found it, if you'd go to the diary room or whatever.
Wow.
Yeah. So, but you, like, and you'd be seeing, other people would be seeing that happening, like, why is that happening? And some people that were taken out to the diary room a lot had a target on their back then.
Excellent.
Like your man Brighton, you'd be like, why is he going out again? There's something going on there. Maybe he's eliminated someone. Do you know what I mean? It was constant, like, you never trusted anyone.
How long did it take you to recover when you came out? Like, you must have been messed up for a few days.
There's still a part of me that, like I watched it back, and I watched back my elimination, and that day I had, like, two or three things to do, and I got into bed. Like, it all came back to me. And if you see the YouTube I put up where how fucked I look, it properly got us. Like, I was in therapy and stuff after it. Like, it was really bad. Do you know what I mean? To the point where I wasn't allowed to go to the bathroom at times. They kept our toothbrushes off us at times. Like, we were captive. Like, it was...
Why did they keep your toothbrushes?
Because they just weren't ready to give them back to us. I was like, I want to brush my teeth and go to bed. I'm like, no, you can't go to bed yet. Like, it was brutal.
And then the therapy, was that in Ireland when you came home? Or?
Yeah, it was over Zoom. Over the course of the year, there might have been three or four different sessions. It's like how, you know, and I gradually got better and better. But when I was eliminated, I didn't speak for maybe 12 hours. And they were sitting me down, talking to me. And I was like, and I was just pushing them all. I was like, I couldn't even say I didn't want to speak to them. I was just like I was in shock. Because we were like, I was 2 days away from being a millionaire. And also, when we went out, the Glass Bridge was next. Everyone knew, if you get to the Glass Bridge, you're going to be a character on this show. You're going to get great TV time if you're on the Glass Bridge. And we were all just a day before it gone. Like, so we were all in bits. Like,
and the money is dangling over you the whole time.
The whole time. So, like,
so for 2 weeks, you're staring up at 4 million.
When will you ever have a 1 in 30 chance of being a millionaire? That's how close we were. Like, and we knew that after today, it's going to be a 1 in 10 chance. Like, we were all so close to it. Like, it was crazy. So you were in a bad way after it. I was in a bad way. And even, like, I'm disappointed now watching back that I didn't get more TV time and stuff like that there. But, like, at the time, I didn't care about that. At the time, it was, could have been a millionaire.
And what was your biggest worries then in therapy for the first couple of sessions? Or what was getting you down?
I don't know if it was worries. It was, like, I was in the therapy sessions. And I was like, how have you gotten away with this? Like, how can you do this to people? Just put us through this for a show? So, like, and it was like, I was genuinely angry. I was like, I don't understand the legality of it. How is this okay? Like, you starved us and lost half a stone. And you wouldn't let me do this and you made me do this. And, like, it was mental. People are suing them, like, think, and probably have a case. Like, it was crazy. But sure, we all signed our life away when you were getting up to it. As the year went on, I looked back at it more fondly. But I watching it back then, it did bring back memories. Like, Jesus, that was hard.
What are they suing them for?
Hypothermia. Some people took fits during red light, green light. It was imagine eight hours not being able to move. Some of these people were in their late 60s.
So they portrayed red light, green light as just kind of
a 5 minutes.
5 minute game.
Yeah. But we were standing there for 40 minutes every time we froze.
40 minutes?
You couldn't move a muscle for 40 minutes and you had to do that for 8 hours. So we would run for 5 seconds, freeze. Don't move for half an hour. Run for 5 seconds, freeze. Don't move for half an hour. Like, it was horrific. There was Marines and Navy SEALs there who said basic training was easier than this. Like,
wow.
Craziness.
Then you're kind of climatizing back into normal life and you're seriously pissed off. You're like, I'm tired, I'm hungry, I'm emotionally...
It was the whole thing of just, you're leaving there knowing the opportunities that you had, and I went back to work. And I was just getting up for work and going to work after being held captive for 2 weeks, nearly being a millionaire. I was like, how do I just go back to life now? Like, now I'm very lucky in the year I've had has been amazing, but I couldn't imagine just like being one of the normal Joe Soaps and like going back to your work and
going back to work,
going back to your retail job and working 9 to 5 and knowing you could have been a millionaire, knowing the opportunities you could have had and stuff. So it was a tough experience.
Do you feel anything towards, what's this guy that's on the cover? What number was he?
Brighton 432.
432. Like, do you feel any kind of anger towards him?
Not particularly. I mean, I messaged him. I was like, how are you finding it all? He's like, yeah, it's crazy because he's blown up and stuff. But like, I think he has like 40,000 followers on Instagram or something. I'm like, and I messaged him like, how are you finding it and stuff like that there? And he's like, oh, it's crazy, blah, blah, blah. But there's some people that got to the top five, did incredibly well, flown out to LA this week and like all this year, but they're going to be back at work in a month or two. Like,
yeah.
Whereas I can't be too angry at it because I'm so lucky to be in the position I'm in. But if I wasn't posting content online, I was still an SNA and I did that. And then I went back to my work and that was the end of it. I would be angry. Like, you'd be raging.
You'd find it hard.
Yeah.
That's really interesting, and I really appreciate your honesty and your insight into the game. It's lovely to be able to get a real insight to it rather than just kind of coming on and saying everything was great and it was a great opportunity. So aside then from Squid Game, and then everything's going great, the content creation is going great, the opportunities are popping up for you, what's next, or what's the next prize that you have your eyes on?
Well, I definitely have plans in place for next year. I've been working on a children's book that sort of focuses on different disabilities and bringing that to the mainstream, because that's what I've been trying to do with Oisin anyway.
Cool.
I want to get into radio. I want to get into more presenting on television, potentially start my own podcast maybe next year. So I definitely have plenty of things I want to tick off, but the main goal is to just continue to be as happy as I've been this year and hopefully keep getting the same opportunities and working as hard and seeing where it takes me, because that's the most exciting thing about all this. You never know what you're doing week to week and you never know what's around the corner. So
have you ever been asked to set up OnlyFans?
Multiple times a day, absolutely.
Times a day, right?
And it's always an itch that goes unscratched.
Yeah, because like Garen is making a few bob there and all he's doing is eating stuff.
Yeah, there you go.
I think people would expect more from you though.
Yeah,
I think you'd have
too
to get,
much of a stigma.
You'd have to get your kit off.
I think for the brand that I'm trying to build at the moment, it's not a good fit. But down the line, if things dry up, never say never.
Right, you would contemplate it.
If you needed a few pounds, do you know what I mean? Listen, we all have our down days.
Yeah. Did you ever talk to Niamh about it?
I've mentioned it in passing. I suppose during the come up period, where I was gaining a few thousand followers a day and stuff, I was, geez, if I started one of them accounts now, we could have a house bought next year.
And what kind of messages do you get? Do you get freaky messages?
Yeah, all sorts.
And from women as well as men?
Women and men. It's actually mainly men.
Yeah, it's mainly men I get as well.
Yeah.
They don't give a fuck.
They don't. Do you know what I mean? I'd be terrified sending a message to someone and getting a screenshot then up in the story. Do you know what I mean? Because I've screenshotted a few messages and posted them in stories. Like the one that asked me for a coffee there last week. I just stuck it up.
The whole name and everything?
Well, it was a picture of a cat.
Okay, okay.
So that's the type of accounts you're getting these messages off.
Yeah, no, and I often think about it. I often think about when we are getting messages from men sliding into our DMs being really inappropriate. Like, what do beautiful women have to put up with?
Oh God, you couldn't imagine.
Sure you couldn't?
Yeah. Show me your feet. Yeah. Send me a photo of your feet.
Yeah. I went through a phase there of, during the summer, not this year, I think it was the last year, of my legs.
Right.
Yeah, people got awful.
You have got nice legs.
No, well, I don't know if I do, but people got awful obsessed with the hairiness of them.
Okay.
Apparently that's a kink.
Right.
Well, hairy legs.
Every day is a school day. You're looking at mine now.
Yeah, I'm just looking to see. I think I have more hair than you. You've more muscle. You've more muscle, but I've more hair.
A good set of ploughing legs.
Yeah. He's sitting here in a pair of shorts, just in case you're wondering. And it's, what day it is today? Today is the 12th of December.
Shorts 24/7.
And if you walked across that car park there now and I just looked out the window, I'd go, look at that dick.
And header. Crocs and shorts is my go-to.
I hope we get the weather he's expecting. Eric, thank you so much for your time today. Thanks for welcoming me into your beautiful home here in Letterkenny. And I wish you all the best with your success. I met you, Was it this time last year or did we meet before that? Was that the first time we met, I think, in Galway?
Must have been last year, yeah.
At the Galway Christmas markets. And there's something very genuine about you. There is. And you're easy to be, you know, it's easy to be in your company, and I can see why you went down the S&A route, and I can see there's something very special in you. And the Egypt that's online that, you know, that throws up that content is only a very, very small proportion of the real Eric Roberts. You know, there's something really lovely about you. There's something really genuine about you. And I wish you all the success in the world because you deserve it.
Thank you very much.
You do deserve it.
And same to yourself.
And your family as well. Your family are lovely, you know, and I've had the pleasure of meeting your dad twice. And, you know, Paddy and his wife, Tanya. And you're all just, you're good stock.
Good stock. We'll take that.
As we'd say. Did you enjoy the show in the Clannery?
I did. It was great crack. And it's amazing to see what you're doing as well. Like, you're one of the hardest workers I know in this industry. And I say myself that I put myself forward for loads and I work hard. But when I'm off, I'm off. Like, I do nothing. Whereas it seems that you love to be busy when you're doing very, very, very little. You're creating your own kind of work, which is amazing to see. So
I don't really have much choice because I don't get the big opportunities that other people get. I don't get invited onto podcasts or invited into anywhere, or I don't get the big brand opportunities that other content creators get.
They're well within your grasp, I feel.
I'm sure they are, but there's some sort of, and I'm not saying that in a begrudging way. I don't let it bother me. I paddle my own canoe, you know, and I'm lucky that the shows are going really well. And that's why I'm so busy, really, mm-hmm. because I kind of have to. It's amazing to have that.
It's in very few people to have that sort of drive, and it's amazing, and I hope to replicate that next year as well in the stuff that I'm seeing, because the majority of stuff of my goals next year are stuff I have to go and get myself, so I'm hoping to take a leaf out of your book and just...
On the show, we'll finish now with this, but on the show in the Clannery in Letterkenny, you came out and you were like, absolutely, I've said it to your face and I'd say it behind your back, yourself and Kayleigh were the highlight of the show. We did this lip sync battle where you had to guess what the other person was saying, but you had noise cancelling headphones on, and it was just a laugh a minute.
It was. That's what they're all about, though. They're good crack, and sure, if you're up for the crack, it's going to be a good show.
Fair play to you. How can people follow you online?
I'm on Instagram and TikTok and Feet Finder, Eric Roberts.
Feet Finder.
Really.
Is that a platform?
I think it is. Yeah.
Feet Finder.
Feet Finder. You find feet on it.
That's a new one on me now.
Well, there you go. Now sign up.
I've awful. I have finger toes.
Okay, hairy feet.
No, my toes are like fingers.
You can interlock them.
I don't think I'd sell many. So it's at Eric Roberts on all the platforms.
Eric Roberts on all the platforms.
You were going to say something else there.
I was going to get intricate with the dots.
Go on,
and
do.
Be grand. I'll Eric Roberts will come across me. Yeah,
literally. All right. Thanks a million, Eric.
Thank you very much.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The Big News Coming Soon podcast. is proudly sponsored by BRB Homes. BRB Homes is Ireland's number one award-winning manufacturer of factory-built homes. We take your home from start to finish. Our homes are A-rated and meet planning regulations. We build to your requirements and your budget. The cost includes your home being turnkey and our chartered engineer's fees. Please get in touch for a viewing of our show homes, a brochure, or for more information. Let BRB Homes take the stress out of your build. Check out brbhomes.ie.